on the location of the impairments in the Russian and some background on our TMDL project. Then I'll get into an update on our ongoing efforts to address sources in the near term before the TMDL is completed. I'll talk a little bit about our efforts to coordinate with Sonoma County and their representatives regarding septic issues and recreation. Like I said, I'm going to fill in for Charles a little bit and talk about the septic policy and finish up with a short but hopefully exciting update on what our monitoring has shown. First, some quick background. The focus of this presentation is the Russian River watershed in which we sit today. As you know, there are several 303D impairments in the watershed, including sediment, temperature, the reservoir mercury impairments, nutrients and DO issues in the laguna, and a few others. But I want to focus this afternoon on the pathogenic indicator bacteria listings. There are six reaches in the watershed that are listed per the 2008-2010 303D list. They are kind of from north to south, a little unnamed tributary that comes off of Fitch Mountain near Healdsburg, the main stem Russian at the Healdsburg Memorial Beach Reach, the main stem Russian from Fife Creek in Guerneville to Dutch Bill Creek in Monterio, Santa Rosa Creek, the Laguna de Santa Rosa, and this is Green Valley Creek. So those are the ones that are listed, and I want to say that in addition to these reaches, we suspect that there are issues potentially from Alexander Valley to the mouth of the Russian at Jenner, and we are looking at that broader geographic area with our monitoring efforts right now. Our monitoring efforts are an early step in the development of a total maximum daily load, or TMDL, for pathogens in the Russian River watershed. We are planning to take that TMDL through the full basin planning process, which, as you know, takes a few years. So because we don't want to wait that long to address the sources that we are concerned about today, we've been working on what one can call early TMDL implementation efforts, which really is a process of identifying the most likely sources, doing what we can now to fix them sooner rather than later. One of the sources of pathogen pollution that we are concerned about is human waste from failing or inadequate on-site wastewater treatment systems, such as septic tanks and leach fields. I'm putting this map back up on the screen. You guys saw it in January because it does pretty clearly demonstrate why we are concerned about septic systems, especially those that are right along the Russian River. This map is kind of a snapshot of the mid-river communities of Oddfellows, Summerhome Park, Hollydale, and Hacienda. This is the Hacienda Bridge right here, River Road, going out towards the west. Just to quickly refresh us, the objective of this mapping effort was to find out what we know and what we don't know about on-site wastewater systems along the river and potential discharges. This blue area here around Oddfellows is connected to a community sewer system. The green parcels are where we know that they have had contact with the county in some form regarding their septic systems. And then the red is parcels that have not been in contact with the county yet, so we really don't even know what they have out there. There's a lot of unknown in the watershed. In order to address this likely source, we are continuing conversations with the county. We've been meeting with Sonoma County PRMD, the Permanent Resource Management Division, Department, and Department of Health staff, and we will continue to do so. Topics of discussion have been the pathogen TMDL, septic system oversight, and of course the draft on-site wastewater treatment systems policy. As you know, Mr. Massey and Mr. Norn, you're going to be in front of the Sonoma County Board of Supervisors on the 15th to continue these discussions. In short, we're moving ahead with the county with the intention of forming an interagency committee to work with the community on addressing septic systems, primarily in Monterio. Before I go any further on some of the early implementation efforts, I'm going to talk briefly about the draft on-site wastewater treatment systems policy and how it may be applied in this watershed with its pathogen impairments. The on-site wastewater treatment system policy, or on-site system policy, is a draft. It's being developed by the State Water Resources Board and our colleagues there. It is out for public comment currently, and I'm sure, you know, many of us were present yesterday during the public meetings they had at the Wells Fargo Center. One of the regulatory categories or tiers that's in this draft policy applies to existing and new on-site systems that are near 303 delisted water bodies that are impaired by pathogen. So those are some of the ones for the Russian that I previously had on the map. And this is what they call their Tier 3. How on-site wastewater treatment systems in these areas will be affected by Tier 3 of the draft policy depends on whether there is an adopted TMDL in place before the policy's five-year compliance schedule kicks in. Under conditions of the draft policy, on-site systems that are near water bodies listed for pathogens and nitrates that don't have an adopted TMDL will be required to have advanced waste treatment systems and meet performance standards. In contract, where there is an adopted TMDL within that five-year time frame, which we expect will be the case with the Russian River TMDL, that we're going to have it done before then, the TMDL will set the conditions for on-site systems within the area that that are affecting the listings. So in short, the draft policy is currently drafted, at least Tier 3, will not apply to on-site wastewater treatment systems in the pathogen-impaired waters because we expect it will be superseded by the TMDL. The comment period for the draft policy closes on the 14th of this month, and I believe the State Board is will be taking the comments that they receive, and I think they're going to have it before the Board for their consideration in March of next year of 2012. Getting back to early TMDL implementation efforts, another one of the sources of pathogen pollution that we are concerned about right now is human waste from folks recreating in and along the Russian River. And again, we've been coordinating with Sonoma County on a few proactive measures that we hope will make a difference. We're working with the water agency on the possibility of installing some portable toilets along the river. And Supervisor Carrillo has convened a task force of Russian River recreation providers, Russian River Keeper, and staff from the Water Agency, Department of Health, Regional Parks, and also staff from this office. The task force decided to focus first on an educational campaign, which started with the installation of some signs along the river. These are the Ours to Protect signs, which I think are great. They were printed and funded and installed with the joint efforts of the Water Agency, Regional Parks, and Russian River Keeper, so they certainly get a lot of credit for these. These signs are at these locations. They're pointed towards the river, so if you're canoeing or kayaking down, you can see it. And I think the best part is that it shows where there's bathroom and trash cans so that, you know, you can stop along the way and get out and use the facilities. And the task force is also working to update and reprint the Russian River Guide. I have a copy here if you guys want to see it. It's a little out of date now, so, you know, it doesn't have some of the newer parks that we've gotten recently, but it does identify again where there are restrooms and put in and pull out facilities and some also river safety issues. So the task force is working to try to get some funding right now to do that. We are also looking for ways to reduce human waste inputs from homeless encampments. We've made some recent progress by working with the City of Santa Rosa via a supplemental environmental project that resulted in the installation of some exclusionary fencing under three bridges along Santa Rosa Creek, and that just happened earlier this year. Finally, our early TMDL implementation efforts will continue to involve all the staff work that we do on a daily basis here in our ongoing regulatory programs, including inspections of publicly owned treatment works, wineries, food processors, and other permitted facilities. We'll continue to work with our Phase 1 and Phase 2 municipal stormwater permittees, as well as with the State Board on the revision of the statewide Phase 2 permit. And of course, as you heard about earlier this morning, we're continuing to develop our dairy permit, which is also going to address the pathogen issue. Now I'd like to switch gears slightly to some of the funner stuff, provide a short update of our summer's monitoring in the watershed. The purpose of our monitoring effort has been kind of twofold. It's been to inform the development of our pathogen TMDL, but it's also been to continue the summertime monitoring of some of the more popular swimming beaches along the main stem of the Russian for just public health and public noticing purposes. We've been really fortunate to work closely with the county, especially Jim Tyler and their lab. And of course, I got to give credit to our wonderful interns, Bob Leahy included on this slide, who's, you know, without them, I don't think we would have gotten as many samples as we were able to get. I also want to say that we have our new in-house lab up and running. It's fully running. It's accredited under the Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Program, or ELAP. So that's given us the ability to run samples on weekends and for about, I think, a third of the cost of what a commercial lab would cost. So it's great to finally get that going full strength. So with this program, there were a few really specific questions that we were trying to answer with the sampling that we're doing this year, and we kind of divided it up into four different kind of sub-monitoring programs, one of which was a more watershed or lower part of the watershed-wide monitoring effort that was designed to help us understand pathogen and indicator bacteria abundance and variability along the main stem and in several tributaries. We sampled 16 sites in the watershed, and we did this weekly from around Memorial Day to actually early October. That slide's not accurate. We went into October this year and collected the indicator bacteria parameters of E. coli, Enterococcus, and total coliform every week, and then we're going to do that five more times during the wet weather period, actually four more times. We've already collected the first one with that first rains that we had a few weeks ago. And then what I think are some of the more exciting parameters of Bactroides, the stable isotopes of nitrate, and the phylochip, which will give us that, you know, 50,000 microbial community information. We did that once. We collected it in August. That sample's on ice, so we can run it this winter. And then we'll collect another one during higher flows. And just the next slide here shows, just names the sites that we sampled at, which you see on
Rebecca,
that map.
Rebecca, it might be useful to go back and just remind everyone what the Bactroides will tell us in the stable isotope.
Absolutely. And I'm going to invite Steve Buckus to come up if I get it wrong, because he's the one who really knows this so well. The Bactroides is going to hopefully tease out a little bit of the source, if it's human or if it's bovine or if it's other, and the other would include avian or canine. So we'll see if we see spikes in the other category, we can then further analyze for avian or canine. But we really are kind of going under the assumption it's bovine, it's human, or primarily. So that is going to be really interesting to see. And the Sonoma County lab is actually running those analyses for us, and it looks like we may be able to run more than we thought. The stable isotopes of nitrate will tease out whether or not it went through, what kind of treatment it went through, if it went through a septic system or a wastewater treatment facility, or kind of came over from overland flow. So that will be really interesting information to have. And then the phylochip is that new technology that came out of the Homeland Security funding, which is actually going to break it down into about 50,000 individual pathogen species. Is species the right word? And it will really tell us exactly where it's coming from is certainly what our hopes are.
Rebecca, can I ask you a question? You took one sample then for the Bactroides stable isotope and phylochip, and that's one you have on ice?
Well, we actually took several samples over this summer. We only have the funds to run for analysis one through the summer period, and then this is for phylochip, and then one through the winter period. And we're going to, they're all frozen, they're all on ice as per protocol, and then we will determine kind of which one we think will give us the most information as we look at what comes back from Bactroides and from the indicator bacteria data.
Is that a composite sample, or how's that? And maybe I'm getting too deep here, too fast. But
no, it's a single sample. It's put on a filter, and then the filter's frozen. It captures the DNA on the filter. We oversample a lot, so, and then we'll sort of cherry pick which ones to actually process.
We're going to get you on the microphone there, mister.
What Steve Buckus of our staff was saying is that it's one sample. We run it through the filter.
Because I've done that type of sampling before, where you run like 500 gallons through a media, and then they actually use the media as the capture mechanism. I've done that. Is that what this is?
Just the filter.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Just the filter.
But I do want to thank our staff for going ahead with PhyloChip. I think it's the revolutionary technology, and 10, 20 years from now, we'll wonder how we got by without it.
I'm certainly excited by it, absolutely. So what I wanted to get into next was showing you some of the indicator bacteria data that we've been collecting over this summer. And again, this is, we collected E. coli and Enterococcus, which is what you see here, as well as total coliform. And I'm going to show you a series of four slides that get at both the single sample data as well as the 30-day geomean, which I'll explain in a moment. But I decided just to look at Enterococcus here this afternoon because it's a genus of bacteria that's found in human intestines, and we think it probably has a stronger correlation to human pathogens and human sickness. So I thought I would put this one up. But the rest of the data is available on our website for those whom are interested. So what you're seeing here, we collected, like I said, 16 sites, so we tried to break it down into two graphs so that you could actually read the graph. Most of the sites here are main stem Russian River sites. The red horizontal line is the threshold that we use to compare. It's from Department of Public Health. It's their guideline of 61 Enterococcus, most probable number of Enterococcus per 100 milliliters. And you can see that there weren't that many exceedances of that threshold in the main stem sites this year. These are the other sites that we collected, the ones we collected on Thursday. You have kind of a combination here of both main stem sites as well as tributary sites. Some jump out. For example, this is Santa Rosa Creek at Prince Memorial Greenway, the red. This is the orangish, is the Laguna de Santa Rosa at Sebastopol Community Center. One of the ones that's lower is Russian River at Geyserville Bridge. So for what you might be interested in, I just encourage you to look at the slides. But you will notice that the tributaries do definitely run higher in the bacteria than some of the main stem sites. I should also point out that these are comparing the data to our single sample threshold of 61, which is there to protect against acute exposure. This slide here is a 30-day running geomean of the same data, but it's compared now to a lower threshold of 33 instead of 61 that is there to protect against chronic exposure. So again, these are the main stem Russian River sites that we collected on Tuesday, which all fall underneath that threshold, and then the Thursday sites, most of which exceed it. And if you have any questions, please ask, but I just encourage people to look at the data, and it is really interesting to see. The next slide I'm going to put up, just for comparison purposes, is our 2009 data, which is, again, single sample data. This is not the running geomeans. This is a single sample, so comparing it to the 61 threshold. And for some of our main stem sites, because we collected fewer sites that year, but 2009 was also a higher water flow year than we had this year, and so you can see that there were more single sample exceedances then. Thank you. It was higher this year.
Hi. Rebecca, and what you're bringing up is a question, particularly if there is such a thing as low flow for the Russian River. We're assuming that there's a constant amount of bacteria, and the loss of water would make these exceedances larger and possibly bring some of the others is that a fair assumption?
I think that's a reasonable hypothesis.
Okay, thank you.
Another one of the monitoring programs that we're working on is really focused at the beach use trying to get us to help us understand the impacts of recreation on pathogen and bacteria levels. We completed this in September around the weekend of the Russian River Jazz and Blues Festival down in Monterey. We got a sample upstream at Johnson's Beach and then run right below where the festival was at Monterey. So again, you can see the parameters that we are analyzing those water samples for, the indicator bacteria, as well as the Bactroides, stable isotopes, and phylochip. And we're still looking at that data, so I don't have the results to fill you in with it yet. But one thing to keep in mind is that that was kind of a cooler weekend than we had hoped, so I'm not sure exactly how much use we had in the river then. We're also trying to get a better understanding of what the variability is of the indicator bacteria at a particular site. So we took three sites in the watershed, Santa Rosa Creek, Healdsburg Memorial Beach, and Monterey. And we really did, we did three different transects at a site, three points at each transect, and took triplicates at each point to really try to see how variable the indicator bacteria levels are at one point. How representative is the other data that we have to what actually is happening in the stream? So unfortunately, I don't have the results yet to really show you, but we do have that data collected and done. So we got a lot of stuff that we're looking at right now. The last piece of the monitoring puzzle that we're doing to help inform the TMDL is a land use-based monitoring program that will hopefully, it will hopefully help us understand, again, kind of the land use sources that affect indicator bacteria and pathogens. We have not determined the locations for the sampling sites yet, but we do know that we're going to try to get about 15 sites, three at each of five different types of land uses, forest land uses, rangeland uses, agricultural land uses, more of the dense urban and residential sewered areas, and then the kind of more rural residential non-sewered areas. And we are going to start that sampling this winter, and we'll continue it into the dry weather of 2012. So we'll hope to have all of our monitoring wrapped up probably by early summer of next year and really can start cranking out and looking at the results. For those who are interested in the data as well as the details behind all this monitoring, our quality assurance project plans and some of the data are available on the website here. And then I also wanted to just put up for everybody's information our schedule for the Russian River TMDL. Again, like I said, we hope to have most of our monitoring wrapped up by the spring, maybe the early summer, and then we're going to work on a monitoring report and start crunching those numbers and getting into the technical analysis. And I will leave that list slide up for anybody who wants to get on our webpage. We have a Russian River TMDL LIRIS email subscription list I encourage people to sign up for, as well as our phone numbers and emails. So any questions, I'm happy to take.
Thanks, Rebecca. Mr. Noren.
Can I ask you to go back a couple slides? So what can I ask you to explain or maybe just expand upon what is right here on your wet weather sampling then three times during wet weather? Do you have a criteria built into your wet weather sampling as representative storm or certain hours after a storm event?
We do, and I could probably answer it, but I might mess it up. So I'm going to invite Steve to come up and answer that.
We have a 0.1 inch rainfall within the last 72 hours. We will try to actually focus the monitoring at the very front of that storm. And we're going to be looking for bigger storms than 0.1. But that is a threshold that EPA defines in its stormwater guidance.
And I've disclosed before, but I've done a lot of sampling for the MS4 for Santa Rosa, Sonoma County. And that was, in the beginning, it was all wet weather sampling that was based on 0.3 inches of rain in 3 hours. And that was a qualifying event preceded by 72 hours of dry. You might go and look at that data because it's been, I believe, reported to you, not by me, but by the participating agencies, because my experience with the E. coli and the fecal total call form in the fecal was that those numbers were gigantic in high flow events.
Yes.
What's interesting, and I've related this actually to people, that My experience now is since the MS4 sampling has changed, so by permit, that sampling's now a grab sample, which it always was a grab sample, but it's grab sample monthly now through wet and dry. And what's interesting is that the sampling that has been done in the last year, I've noticed that the bacterial numbers are many, many orders of magnitude lower in the dry. And it's just an observation that I've had. Wet weather sampling, which is traditionally what the MS4 was built around, had these huge bacterial numbers. And whether it was a mobilization off of land within that watershed, I'm not really sure. But it's quite stark, the differences, mm-hmm. like five orders of magnitude different.
Yeah. That's exactly what we expect, and that's why these designs are such that we can actually separate wet and dry periods. And the risk factors are different, too, so you really have to look at. People are really recreating in the dry period, so you can't just say, well, you know, because you have to look at both times. And during the wet period, even though the numbers are higher, you have less people out there that are contacting that water, so your risks are also lower.
Well, and granted, the sampling that I did was off the urban landscape. We did some out in Matanzas Creek as well because there was a station out there for quite a while, but the numbers were quite high. I think that data is probably in
I'm familiar with that
files.
Data.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting. Bacterial sampling is very interesting. And to get to Mr. Massey's point is that, you know, it's interesting to look at these periodic, whether you do a dry season or you do a wet season, and you compare and contrast those, and whether you have recreate or not, or you're off, like you say, Rebecca, off of different types of landforms. That's going to be quite interesting data to try and correlate back to, you know, what is going on out there. And then also with the equation of the manipulation of flow within the main stem of the Russian. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca, for this. I think Mr. Norton and I are living this, as it were, and you are providing particularly interesting stuff. The phylo stuff is going to be real interesting, particularly when you can go to a meeting and say, no, it is not the weasels and the ducks. That will be wonderful.
And I think the Bactroides data will also help us with that a little bit, and we should have that sooner. I'm expecting probably in a few months we should start getting at least some of the results back on the Bactroides.
Thank you.
Thanks. And if we hear someone quacking, we know that it was.
Patty, did we get any cards on that? Ms. Edelman.
Good afternoon. Brenda Edelman, Russian River Watershed Protection Committee. This is an issue near and dear to my heart since it has such a big effect on the lower Russian River. And I had some thoughts when I filled the card out, but most of it was addressed. I'm glad that there was a differentiation between the lower flows and the higher flows. One thing that was not mentioned was temperature. I mean, I don't know if temperature would have an impact, but I know that the flows go down more when it's hotter out. And one of the reasons we've had higher flows the last 2 years was not only because of rainfall, but we've had two cool summers in a row. And therefore, not as much water gets used up. The flows have very seldom gone under the 125 CFS at Hacienda. And this whole issue about low flow coming up in another EIR called, ironically, the Fish Flow Project, your agency had submitted comments during the scoping, which I thought were very excellent. And I hope that you all continue to pay attention to that issue because I think it's highly relevant to this issue. I also think that, you know, it's critically important to determine to what extent septics are providing part of this problem or, you know, increasing this problem. It's a really hard subject to get your hands around because there are just so many possible causes for the bacteriological counts. And I know that at the meeting yesterday, it was really quite interesting, and people are really worried. I know there's been a really good committee out in Monterio that meets regularly. I've gone to many of their meetings. But it's kind of losing its energy, unfortunately. I hate to say it, but people in the community who are concerned about this issue have not really been attending those meetings. And I just want to call to your attention that when the rubber hits the road, those people are going to come out of their houses and make their voices heard. And I know it's going to be similar to prior meetings with the state on this issue, because people are really hurting. And at yesterday's meeting, the one message that came out, and I was there in both the afternoon and part of the evening, over and over and over again, you need to find funding to help us out. And that was the biggest message that went through to the board yesterday. And I know that one concern that people have is this whole issue of unfunded mandates. And I know Mr. Massey has attended some of the meetings in Monterio and has explained the situation, and people have said, okay, well, we need help figuring out what to do, because they've already gone through an 11 or 12 year process, which got thrown out because it was too expensive, $22 million for the plan they had. So they're really needing assistance, but unfortunately your agency is also having your own funding staffing problems and your own restrictions. And it's a very difficult situation, because we all know something needs to happen, but the issue of how to pay for it is a very serious one. And there is a lot of low-income housing out in the Russian River community, and I don't think anybody wants to see people lose their houses over this. So at any rate, I want to thank you for this report. I think staff is doing an excellent job, and the only thing I'm concerned about is that she did present some 2009 data, but I think that you need to be looking at enough years over a period of time to get the big picture, and that just looking at 2 or 3 years might not be adequate to draw firm long-range conclusions, maybe tentative ones. But there are a whole range of possibilities that could happen from 1 year to the next. And I know, living on the river for 35 years, that the changes in the river are absolutely dramatic. And anyone who lives on a river knows that'll happen. The differences in the winter and the summer are just extraordinary. So at any rate, thank you for your efforts with this.
Thanks, Brenda.
Mr. Chair? Just if I could add two things to that are upcoming. One is, as Rebecca alluded to, that Mr. Norn and Mr. Massey have agreed to represent the board in front of the county supervisors to make a plea to, can we work together on issues related to the river, particularly with the issues related to sewage and human waste, knowing that there are going to be some changes that are going to be coming our way, and that the more time we have to plan for them and try to line up funding and find, you know, creative answers, the better we're going to be able to serve our community. And so to introduce that to the supervisors on the 15th of November, and they have agreed to stand up for the board. So that's one item. The other is, I was hoping to get perhaps the same two gentlemen to go to Sacramento to have a discussion with the state board, some of the state board members, on the proposed on-site waste treatment system rule. We also have concerns with that rule that we have expressed to Sacramento, and I think it might be useful to have a board-to-board discussion about some of the problems we see, how that rule might play out in our region.
Are you up for it, Mr. Noren?
Count me in, mister.
Okay. Chip and Dale will go.
Chip and Dale.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. All right. With that, we'll close item 10.